Chapter 54. They abandoned their entourage of guards in the elevator on the top floors. No one cared that it would be too easy to deduce where they were heading. Hopefully, by the time anyone snapped out of Cinder's brainwashing, they'd be long gone. The research wing's emergency service elevator was kept on its own, in an alcove tucked away from the rest of the wing. It was their final obstacle, and Cress had taken care to ensure it would be functioning properly when they arrived. She stumbled ahead of them to punch in the code, emotionally drained. It felt as if her brain were churning through sludge, and it took her a moment to remember the code at all. The elevator opened and they crowded inside. No one spoke, whether out of respect for Dr. Erland or out of a tenuous hope that they were so close, so very close. The doors opened onto the roof. Dusk was climbing over the city, glistening off the palace windows and coating the landing pad in purple shadows. And the Rampian was there. Its ramp lowered toward them. Cress laughed, an abrupt, delirious laugh that felt like it was being ripped out of her throat. Iko let out a victorious whoop and ran for the ramp, screaming, "We did it!" Thorne's grip tightened on Cress's arm. "He's here. He's here," she whispered back. Wolf alone slowed down, baring his teeth. Kai was still draped over his shoulder.
"Jason, ready for takeoff, now!" Cinder yelled toward the ship. "We're..."
Her words fell short, and she slowed, then stopped altogether. Cress gasped and locked her hands around Thorne's arm, holding him back. A figure appeared at the top of the cargo bay ramp. Her white coat and long sleeves made her look like a ghost haunting their ship, blocking their way to freedom. Cress's instincts screamed at her to run, to hide, to get as far away from Mistress Sybil as she could. But when she glanced behind her, she saw that the Thaumaturge wasn't alone. Half a dozen lunar guards had crowded in behind them, blocking off their path to the elevator. The elevator that wouldn't have worked anyway. She'd programmed it to shut down once they reached the rooftop so that no one could follow them. It wouldn't work again until the timer she'd set on the security mainframe ticked down and the system rebooted itself. Which meant they had no place to run, no place to hide. They were 40 steps from their ship, and they were trapped. Cinder's momentary elation evaporated as she looked up at the Thaumaturge. She should have sensed her immediately, her and the guards, before she'd even stepped off the elevator. But she'd been so distracted with the sensation of success. She'd gotten cocky, and now they were surrounded.
"What a lovely reunion," said Sybil, her sleeves snapping in the rooftop wind. "Had I known you were all going to come to me, I wouldn't have wasted half as much energy attempting to find you."
Cinder tried to keep her focus on Sybil as she took stock of her allies. Wolf was slightly in front of her, snarling as he set Kai on the ground. Though he wasn't showing any pain, she could see a small spot of blood on Wolf's dress shirt. His stitches must have come undone, reopening the wound. Iko wasn't far from him, the only one of them not panting. Cress and Thorne were to Cinder's left. Thorne had a cane and, she thought, he might still have his gun, too. But he and Wolf could easily become liabilities, weapons to be toyed with by the Thaumaturge, unlike Cress and Iko, who couldn't be controlled.
"How many?" Thorne asked.
"Mistress Sybil in front of us," said Cress, "and 6 lunar guards behind."
After the slightest hesitation, Thorne nodded.
"I accept those odds." "So charming," said Sybil, tilting her head.
"My little protege has been embraced by cyborgs and androids and criminals, the scum of earthen society. Quite fitting for a useless shell."
From the corner of her eye, Cinder noticed Thorne easing himself as a shield between Cress and the Thaumaturge. But it was Cress who lifted her chin, with a look more confident than Cinder had ever seen on her.
"You mean the useless shell that just disconnected the link to all your palace surveillance equipment?"
Sybil clicked her tongue.
"Arrogance doesn't suit you, dear. What do I care if the connection has been severed? Soon, this palace will be the home of Queen Lavanna." She nodded. "Guards,
leave His Majesty and the Special Operative unharmed. Kill the rest.
Cinder heard the thunk of boots, the rustle of uniforms, the click of guns being released from their holsters. She opened her thoughts to them. 6 lunar men, 6 royal guards who, just like Jason, had been trained to keep their minds open, trained to be puppets. She sought out the electric pulses around them. In unison, all 6 guards turned toward the edge of the rooftop and threw their guns as hard as they could. 6 handguns sailed out of sight, clattering somewhere on the tiled rooftops below. Sybil let out a screech of laughter, the most unrestrained Cinder had ever witnessed from her.
You have learned a few things since we last saw each other, haven't you?
Sybil paced down the ramp.
Not that controlling a handful of guards is any impressive feat.
Her gaze flickered to Wolf. Abandoning the guards, Cinder reached out for him instead, bracing herself for the sharp burst of pain inside her head that happened every time she took control of Wolf. But the pain didn't come. Wolf's mind was already closed to her, as if someone had locked his writhing energy up in a vault. Then he swiveled toward Cinder, his face contorting with a feral hunger. Cursing, Cinder took half a step back. Her memory flashed to all the duels inside the cargo bay, and then Wolf launched himself at her. Ducking, Cinder held her hands toward his abdomen and used his momentum to flip him over her head. He landed lithely on his feet and spun back, aiming a right hook for her jaw. Cinder deflected with her metal fist, but the force drove her off balance and she fell onto the hard asphalt of the landing pad. Planting both hands on the ground, she drove her heel up toward Wolf, catching him in the side, his wounded side. She hated herself for it, but he grunted in pain and stumbled half a step back. She sprang back to her feet. She was already panting. Warnings flooded her retina display. Wolf licked his lips as he prepared to charge for her a second time, revealing the glint of his sharp teeth. Smothering her panic, Cinder tried to reach for him again. If only she could break Sybil's mental hold. If only she'd gotten to him first. She searched for some flicker of the wolf she knew was encased inside all that fury and bloodlust, some vulnerable spot in his mind. She was so distracted by her attempts to dislodge Sybil's control that she didn't notice the roundhouse kick until it had crashed into the side of her head and sent her reeling halfway across the platform. She lay on her side, dizzy, white sparks flashing in her vision, and her left arm burning from skidding across the ground. Breath wouldn't come into her lungs. She couldn't lift her head. Programming diagnostics were going berserk, and it took her a moment to remember how to send them away so she could focus. As her vision cleared, she noticed shapes moving against the twilight sky. People in shadows, fighting, brawling, the hazy images were eventually coupled with grunts of pain. The guards had attacked. Thorn had gotten a knife from somewhere. Kress was wildly swinging his cane, and Aiko was using her metal and silicon limbs as best she could to defend herself. But Thorn was blind, and Aiko wasn't programmed with fighting skills, and as soon as one of the guards grabbed the cane out of Kress's hands, she fell to her knees, paralyzed, cowering behind her arms. As Cinder watched, a guard caught Thorn's wrist and yanked it behind his back. He cried out. The knife fell. Another guard landed a punch to his stomach. Then Cinder heard a growl. Wolf was crouched, ready to come at her again. Cinder resisted the urge to close her eyes and brace for impact, instead letting a slow breath out through her nose. She urged her muscles to relax with it. Your mind and body have to work together. For a moment, it was like being 2 people at once. Her eyes were open, focused on Wolf as he lunged for her, and her body, loose, unrelaxed, instinctively rolled away before she bounced back to her feet. At the same time, her lunar gift sought out the pulses of energy around her, targeted the 6 guards, and wrapped so tightly around them it was like clasping them in enormous metal fists. There was a jolt of surprise from the guards. 1 crashed to his knees, 2 fell onto their sides, convulsing. Cinder dodged another punch, blocked another kick. Her instincts yearned to use the knife inside her finger, but she refused. Wolf wasn't the enemy. She landed an uppercut to his jaw. Her first solid strike as those words infiltrated her brain. Wolf isn't the enemy.
A blur of blue caught her eye. Aiko jumped onto Wolf's back with a battle cry, wrapping her legs around his waist. Her arms surrounded his head, trying to blind or suffocate or distract him any way she could. She was successful for 2.3 seconds before Wolf reached behind him, grabbed hold of her head, and twisted with such force the skin ripped around her throat. The wiring along her upper spine popped and sparked. Aiko slipped off him, crumpling to the ground. Her legs were twisted awkwardly beneath her. The external plating that protected her collar structure was peeled back on one side, revealing disconnected wires and a torn muscle pad, already leaking thick yellow silicon down her shoulder. Cinder stumbled and crashed to her knees, staring at the crooked form. Her internal audio latched onto that awful sound and began replaying it over and over. That same brutal snap. That same heavy thud as Aiko's body hit the ground. Her stomach heaved once, but she kept it down as she peeled her gaze away from Aiko and looked, not at Wolf, but at Sybil. The thaumaturge was standing at the base of the ramp now. Her beautiful face was pinched in concentration. In her distant thoughts, Cinder could tell that the guards were picking themselves off the ground, rounding on her friends again. Snarling, she ignored them all. She ignored Wolf. Sybil was the enemy. Wolf turned back to face her. His feet pounded on the pavement. But Cinder was too focused on the bioelectricity rolling off Sybil to care. Sybil's energy was twisted and arrogant and proud, and Cinder had just slipped into the cracks of her thoughts when the impact came. Wolf crashed into her, knocking her over, but Cinder barely felt it. While Wolf pinned her to the ground, Cinder was working her way around Sybil's gift, becoming intimately acquainted with how the energy rippled along her limbs and fingers, how it was so different from the way the same energy churned and throbbed inside her brain. As Wolf revealed his sharp canines, Cinder discovered where Sybil's gift was boiling hot in her attempts to control Wolf, leaving the rest of her brain cool and vulnerable. When Wolf lowered his fangs toward Cinder's unprotected throat, Cinder seized Sybil's mind and attacked. Chapter 55. Crack. Kress glanced up just as Aiko slid off Wolf's back, landing broken and mangled on the hard ground. A shudder tore through her. Even from this distance, she could see the torn flesh and sparking wires.
What was that?
She returned her attention to Thorn. She was still kneeling beside him, trying to steady him as best she could. He'd taken a hard punch to his stomach that had knocked the wind from him, but at least he was breathing and talking again.
I think we just lost Aiko, she said. Can you stand?
Thorn groaned, still clasping one hand to his stomach.
Yeah,
he said, sounding none too convinced. Something shuffled. Glancing up, Kress squeaked and dug her fingers into Thorn's arms. The guards, having been paralyzed and empty-faced for the past few moments, were twitching. One of them groaned. Beside her, Thorn pulled himself to his feet.
There, better, he said, though he was still grimacing. Do you see my cane anywhere, or my knife?
She spotted a cane behind one of the guards, whose furious gaze was no longer empty or harmless.
Kress.
Guards are up again, she said.
Thorn flinched. All six of them?
She glanced over her shoulder.
And Cinder's on the ground. She might be unconscious, and Wolf's still under Sybil's control, and I think he's going to...
She squeezed Thorn's arm. Horrified at the sight of Wolf pinning Cinder to the ground. She wanted to look away, but couldn't, like being stuck in a bad dream.
That all sounds very dire, said Thorn.
Shivering, she pressed her back against him, wondering how her death was going to come. Her skull crushed against the concrete, her neck snapped like Aiko's.
I guess it's time.
While Kress's thoughts continued to churn through the horrible things that could happen to her, she felt herself being suddenly spun around and dipped backwards, a supportive arm scooping beneath her back. She yelped and caught herself on Thorn's shoulder. Then, he was kissing her. The battle became a hurricane, with them caught in the eye.
his arms cradling her against the wind, her skirt billowing around his legs, his lips gentle but coaxing, as if they had all the time in the world. Warmth overtook her, and Cress closed her eyes. She thought her arms wanted to wrap around his neck, but her whole body was vibrating and dizzy, and she could barely keep her fingers clutched around the fabric of his shirt. She had just finished melting when she was suddenly righted again. The world flipped. Thorn spun, embracing her against his chest with one arm, while the other reached for his waist. Cress heard the gunshot and screamed, pressing herself against him, before she realized that Thorn was the one who had fired. A guard grunted. Another guard grabbed Thorn by the collar, and he turned, elbowing the guard in the jaw. "Cress, do me a favor." He twirled her around so that her back was against him. She was beginning to feel like a satellite being constantly spun out of orbit, but she had no time to think as Thorn settled his arm around her shoulder. "Make sure I don't shoot anyone we like." He fired again, and the bullet clipped a guard's bicep. The guard barely flinched and lunged toward them. Gasping, Cress wrapped her hands around Thorn's and aimed. He fired again, this time hitting the guard in the chest. He stumbled backward and fell. Cress swiveled, pulling Thorn's hand toward the next guard. Another shot to the chest. A third shot hit the next guard's shoulder. She aimed for the fourth. Click, click. Thorn cursed. "Well, that was fun while it lasted." The guard laughed. He was tall and made of muscle, with orange-red hair that swept nearly straight up, and he was the only guard that Cress recognized. She'd seen him on the surveillance footage before, usually along with the rest of the Queen's entourage, which meant he was probably the highest-ranking guard among them. "If it's all right with you," he said, "I'll be killing you now." "Aren't you a gentleman?" Thorn said, pulling Cress behind him and raising his fists. A scream split through the wind. Not just a scream, but a scream made up of pain and delirium, torture and agony. Cress and Thorn both ducked and covered their ears. And at first, Cress was terrified that it was Cinder. But when she looked, Mistress Sybil had fallen on the ground and was twitching and digging her nails into her scalp. The scream went on and on as she twisted and flailed, craning her head so fast it smacked against the asphalt, then curling up on herself like a fetus, searching for relief that wasn't coming. Cinder still appeared unconscious, with Wolf hovering over her, but then he whipped his head like a bedraggled dog and sprang away from Cinder with wild, remorseful eyes. Cinder stayed corpse-like on the ground. "Stop!" the red-haired guard yelled. He grabbed Cress, yanking her away from Thorn and wrapping one hand around her throat. She screamed and clawed at his wrists, but he didn't seem to notice. "I said stop, or I'll crush her throat!" Though he was yelling, he could hardly be heard over Sybil, and either Cinder didn't hear him, or she didn't care. Or she couldn't stop. Cress tried to kick behind her, but her legs were too short, and already darkness was encroaching on her vision. Crack. The guard's fist loosened, and he toppled over, unconscious. Cress stumbled away from him, rubbing her neck. Spinning around, she saw Thorn holding his cane like a club. "I found my cane," he said, tossing it once with a twirl and trying to catch the other end, but missing. The cane clattered to the floor. Thorn flinched. "Are you all right?" She gulped, ignoring how it burned in her throat.
Yes.
"Good." Thorn picked up the cane again. "Now, what in the name of spades is all the screaming about?"
"I don't know. Cinder's doing something to Mistress Sybil. Something with her gift."
"Well, it's annoying and we're running out of time. Come on." One of the guards they'd shot reached out for Cress's ankle as she passed, but she kicked at him as they ran for Cinder. Wolf was shaking her, but she wasn't responding. Behind them, Sybil's screams tapered into uncontrollable blubbering as she convulsed on the ground.
"Maybe Cinder has to be rebooted," said Thorn, after Cress had described the situation as well as she could. "That happened once before. Here."
He reached beneath Cinder's head, and Cress heard a click. Cinder's eyes popped open, and her hand snapped around Thorn's wrist. Crying out, he fell over onto the ground. Sybil's sobs dwindled to whimpering.
"Don't open my control panel," she said, releasing Thorn.
She shut the plate in her head.
"Then stop going comatose on me." He stood up. Can we go now before the entire Commonwealth military shows up?
Cinder sat up, blinking.
Iko.
Right, Wolf. Could you get the android, please, and the Emperor? I trust he's still around here somewhere.
The Emperor. In the chaos, Kress had forgotten all about him.
Sirens.
Kress looked at Wolf. His head was cocked to one side.
Heading this direction.
Which means the military won't be far behind, said Cinder. I take it there's no sign of Jason?
No one responded. There had been no sign of their gateway pilot since the fight had started.
Kress licked her lips. Had he betrayed them? Had he told Sybil about their plan?
Figures, said Cinder. Thorn, you're with me in the cockpit. Jason and I practice takeoffs.
Once. You can help jog my memory.
Together, they hurried to carry Iko's broken body and Kai, still unconscious, into the cargo bay. Then, they heard laughter. High, strained laughter that dropped ice down Kress's spine. Sybil was struggling to stand. She made it to her feet and took a couple wobbling steps before falling back down to one knee. She laughed again and bunched her fists into her long, unruly hair. Kress was suddenly pushed aside as Wolf trudged down the ramp and grasped Sybil by the front of her white coat, yanking her toward him. Her eyes rolled back into her head.
Where is she? He yelled. Is she still alive?
Even from the top of the ramp, Kress could see the hatred burning in his eyes, overshadowed only by his need to know. To be given any sliver of hope that Scarlet was still out there, that he still had a chance to save her. But Sybil's head only collapsed to one side.
What? What pretty birds, she said, before she was overcome with a fit of incoherent giggles.
Wolf snarled, baring his teeth. For a moment, his entire body was shaking, and Kress thought he was going to tear her throat out. But then, he dropped Sybil to the ground. She fell hard, whimpered from the impact, and rolled onto her back. Then, she started to laugh again, staring up at the sky. The sun was just setting, but the full moon had already risen high over the city's skyline. Turning away from her, Wolf marched up the ramp. He did not meet Kress's gaze as he passed her. Kress stared, bewildered, as Sybil raised both arms up toward the sky, cackling, cackling. The ramp started to rise, slowly blocking the sight of Sybil and the bleeding guards who were scattered around the rooftop. The roar of the engines soon drowned out both the mad laughter and the sirens blaring beyond the palace walls. Chapter 56. To anyone who would have seen her, Lavanna was a vision of serenity in her ethereal red wedding gown and the sheer gold veil that fell to her wrists. She sat on the settee in her guest quarters, posture perfect, her hands folded in her lap. Except they were not folded at all, but rather balled into angry fists. Each one held a wedding band, one that she had worn for far too many years, that she had once believed would bring her love and happiness, but had only ever brought her pain. The other was supposed to bring her not the love of a blind, selfish husband, but the love of an entire planet. She should have been wearing it now. Everything had been going so well. She had been moments away from walking down that aisle. Moments away. She should have been married. She should have been reciting the vows that would make her empress. When she found out who was responsible for this delay, she would torment their fragile mind until they were a drooling, pathetic idiot, terrified of the sight of their own hands. A knock cut through the fantasy. Lavanna shifted her eyes toward the door.
Enter.
One of the guards entered first, escorting Khan Torin, the young emperor's annoying, perpetually present advisor. She glared at him through her gold veil, though she knew he couldn't see it.
Your illustrious majesty, he said, bowing deeply.
The addition of a new adjective combined with the bow slightly lower than usual made the hair prickle on the back of her neck.
I must apologize most severely for the delay and for the news I have to impart to you. We have been forced, I'm afraid, to postpone the marriage ceremony.
I do beg your pardon.
He straightened, but kept his gaze respectfully on the floor. His Imperial Majesty, Emperor Kaito, has been kidnapped. He was taken from his personal quarters and smuggled onto an untraceable spaceship. Her fingers curled around the wedding bands. By whom? Lin Cinder, Your Majesty. The cyborg fugitive from the ball, along with multiple accomplices, it would appear. Lin Cinder. Every time she heard the name, she wanted to spit.
I see, she said, finding it too wearisome to soften the hardness of her anger. Am I to believe that you did not have any security measures in place for the attempt of such an assault?
Our security was compromised.
Compromised.
Yes, Your Majesty. She rose to her feet. The gown swished like a breeze around her hips. The advisor didn't flinch, although he should have.
You're telling me that this teenage girl has not only escaped from your prison and evaded capture by your highly trained military, but has now invaded your palace and the private quarters of the Emperor himself, kidnapped him, and again gotten away with it?
Precisely correct, Your Majesty.
And what are you doing now to retrieve my groom?
We have employed every police and military unit at our disposal.
Not good enough!
This time, he did flinch. Lavanna steadied her breathing.
The Commonwealth has failed too many times with regards to Lin Cinder.
Beginning now, I will employ my own resources and tactics in finding her. My guards will need to review all your security footage from the past 48 hours.
The advisor clasped his hands behind his back.
We are happy to give you access to the security footage we have available. However, we are missing approximately 2 hours of footage that was compromised this afternoon by the security breach.
She sneered. Fine. Bring me what you do have.
Thaumaturge Amory Park appeared in the doorway.
Your Majesty, if I may request a word with you in private.
With pleasure. She waved a hand at Con Torin. You're dismissed. But note that the incompetence of your security team will not be ignored.
With no argument and another low bow, the advisor left. As soon as he was gone, Lavanna whipped the veil off her head and threw it onto the settee.
The young emperor has been kidnapped, and from his own palace. Earthens are pathetic. It's amazing they haven't already become extinct.
I do not disagree, Your Majesty. I trust Mr. Khan did not inform you of this evening's other interesting development.
What development?
Amory's eyes danced.
It appears that Dr. Sage Darnell is in this palace, trapped in a quarantine room in the research wing.
Sage Darnell? She paused. Daring to return after he assisted the escape of that wretched girl?
No doubt they've been working together, although I've been led to believe that Dr. Darnell won't be around for much longer. It appears he's contracted an unusual strain of letamosis, one that seems to be much faster acting than the common strain, and, of course, he is lunar.
Her pulse skipped. This did open up some interesting possibilities.
Take me to him, she said, sliding her true wedding ring back onto her finger.
The other, that would cement her to Emperor Kaito, she left behind.
I must warn you,
Amory said as she followed him into the corridor,
that the elevators throughout the palace are malfunctioning. We will be forced to take the stairs.
Earthens,
she growled, lifting the hem of her skirt. It was like traversing an endless labyrinth, but finally, they reached the research wing. A crowd of officials had gathered outside the lab, and Lavanna sneered to think that they'd intended to keep this from her, when Sage Darnell, like Lin Cinder, was her problem to deal with, however it pleased her. As she entered the lab room, she slipped into the minds of the men and women around her, and impressed a strong need to be elsewhere. The room was cleared within seconds, but for her and Amory. It was a crisp, chemical-smelling room, all bright lights and hard edges, and on the other side of a tinted window, Dr. Sage Darnell was laid out on a lab table, holding a gray cap against his stomach. With the exception of the security footage that showed him helping Lynn Cinder escape from prison, Lavanna hadn't seen him since he disappeared over a decade ago. Once, he had been one of her most promising scientists, making grand advances in the development of her lupine soldiers on an almost monthly basis. But time had not been kind to him. His face had become worn and wrinkled. He was balding, and what was left of his hair was tufted and gray. And then there was the disease. His reptilian skin was covered in bruise-like blotches and a rash that was bubbling up like blisters, piling on top of each other. His fingertips had already begun to turn blue. No, he would not be around much longer. Lavanna floated toward the window. A light was on beside a microphone, indicating that communication was open between the two rooms.
My good Dr. Darnell, I did not think I would ever again have the pleasure.
His eyes opened, still fervently blue behind his spectacles. His attention was locked on the ceiling, and though it occurred to Lavanna that this was no doubt a one-way window, it annoyed her that he wouldn't bother to face her.
Your Majesty, he said, his tone brittle. I thought I might hear your voice one more time.
Beside her, Amory checked a port screen at his belt and excused himself with a low bow.
I must say, I'm delighted with this irony. You left an honorable position on Luna to come to Earth and devote your last withering years to finding a cure for this disease. A disease that I already have the antidote for. In fact, come to think of it, I might have some samples with me in the palace. I like to keep them on hand in the event something tragic should happen to my betrothed or someone else necessary to my objectives. I could have the antidote brought to you, but I don't suppose I will.
Worry not, my queen. I would not take it from you, even if you did, now that I know what lengths you've gone to obtain it.
The lengths I've gone to, in order to cure a disease that, until this day, did not affect my own people? I do believe that's rather charitable of me, wouldn't you say?
He slowly, slowly sat up. His head fell to his chest as he tried to recapture his breath, winded from that small exertion.
I figured it out, my queen. I truly believed that all shells were killed when you took them from us. But that's not true. Are any of them killed? Or is it all just a show? A means of putting them into seclusion and harvesting their blood without anyone coming to look for them?
Her lashes fluttered.
You had a shell child once, didn't you? Remind me, was it a little boy or a little girl? Perhaps when I return home I can find them and tell them how small and pathetic their father was when he died, right before my eyes.
What is most interesting to me,
the doctor said, scratching his ear and acting as if he hadn't heard her,
is that the first documented case of lethemosis occurred 12 years ago, and yet you've been collecting antibodies for much longer than that. In fact, it would have been your sister who began the experiments, if my math is correct.
Lavanna splayed her fingers on the counter.
You have reminded me why you were such a terrible loss for our team, Doctor.
He swiped his arm across his damp forehead. His skin seemed translucent beneath the bright lights.
This disease is all your doing. You've manufactured death to bring Earth to its knees, so that when the time was right, you would be there to save them with your miraculous antidote. One that you'd had stashed away all along.
You give me too much credit.
It was the team working beneath my parents that created the disease, and those beneath my sister who perfected the antidote. I simply implemented their research by determining a means of getting the disease down to Earth.
By exposing Lunars to it and then sending them here, having no idea what they were carrying?
Sending them to Earth? Absolutely not. I simply made sure that my security personnel looked the other way when they escaped.
The last word held a bite. She wasn't fond of the idea that some of her people chose to run away from the paradise she'd given them.
It's biological warfare.
Dr. Darnell coughed into his elbow, leaving spots of dark red.
And Earth has no idea.
And they will continue to have no idea. Because I'm going to stand here and watch you die.
He laughed shrilly.
You honestly think I would carry this secret to my grave?
A twinge of annoyance traipsed down her spine. The doctor's eyes were glazing over, but his smile was enormous as he studied the window.
This is a very large mirror I'm looking into. So impossible to hide from what I am, what I've become.
My queen, you would not like to die in this room. I suspect you would tear off your own flesh if forced to stare at it for so long.
She squeezed her hands into fists, digging her nails into the palms of her hands.
Your Majesty.
Exhaling, she forced her hands to open. Her palms stung. Amory had returned with Jericho, her captain of the guard, looking as though he'd been in an impressive scuffle. Jericho bowed.
My queen, Thaumaturge Mira and I, along with five of my top marksmen, managed to surround Lynn Cinder and her companions on the emergency landing pad on this tower's rooftop.
Hope warmed her chest.
And you got them? They haven't escaped after all?
No, Your Majesty. We failed in our objective. Two of my men are dead, and the other three severely injured. I myself was unconscious when the spacecraft escaped with the traitors and the Emperor Kaito aboard.
Her fury began to claw at her spine again, desperate to be unleashed.
And where is Thaumaturge Mira?
He respectfully lowered his gaze.
Dead, Your Majesty. Lynn Cinder used her gift to torture her mind. I heard her screams myself. Those who were conscious have reported that, after the spacecraft departed, Thaumaturge Mira threw herself from the rooftop. Her body was found in the gardens.
A mad giggling echoed through the room. Lavanna spun back as the doctor doubled over his knees, kicking his heels against the table.
She deserved it, the snake. After keeping my little golden bird locked up in her cage for so long.
Your Majesty,
Lavanna faced Jericho again.
What?
We've found one of Lynn Cinder's accomplices aboard their ship prior to the confrontation. Her new pilot, it would seem.
Jericho gestured toward the hall. Footsteps clicked, and a moment later, two men entered. Another guard escorting. Her smile was quick.
Dearest Sir Clay.
Though his wrists were bound behind his back, he stood straight and proper and seemed as healthy as ever. He clearly hadn't been treated like a prisoner aboard Lynn Cinder's ship.
My queen, he dipped his head.
She scraped her lunar gift over him, testing for signs of derision or rebellion, but there were none. He was as blank and malleable as ever.
My understanding is that you abandoned your thaumaturge in a pivotal battle in order to side with Lynn Cinder against the Lunar Crown. Your being here leads me to understand that you are also involved with the kidnapping of my betrothed. You are a traitor to myself and to my throne. How do you plead?
Innocent, my queen.
She laughed.
Of course you are. How can you plead thus?
He held her gaze without remorse.
During the battle aboard the spaceship, Thaumaturge Mira was consumed with the effort to control a lunar special operative who has joined the side of the rebels. With my own faculties open, Lynn Cinder forced me to comply with her will and fight against my thaumaturge, ultimately leading to her abandoning the ship and leaving me aboard.
Realizing this was an opportunity to ingratiate myself to the rebels, I have spent the past weeks acting as a spy with the intention of reporting weaknesses and strategies when I was finally able to return to my queen, who I am most honored to serve. She smirked.
No doubt your eagerness to return encompassed a desire to see your beloved princess as well.
There, finally, the tiniest ripple of emotion before the lake was once again still as glass.
I live to serve all members of the Lunar Royal Family, my queen.
She smoothed her fingers down her skirt.
How can I believe that you remain loyal to me when you are standing before me in chains, having been dragged from the enemy's own ship?
I would hope my actions prove my loyalties. Had I wanted Lin Cinder to succeed in her objectives, I would not have sent Thaumaturge Mira a comm informing her where and when I would be arriving with that ship.
Lavanna raked her gaze over Jason before glancing at Jericho.
Is this true? I can't say. Thaumaturge Mira did seem confident of the location when we went to intercept the traitors, but she didn't say anything about a comm, and she seemed furious when we found Jason in the cockpit. It was under her order that we took him into custody.
All due respect, said Jason. I did shoot her during our last engagement, and the comm was sent anonymously. She may not have realized I was the one who'd sent the tip in the first place.
Lavanna waved away the statement.
We will investigate further, Sir Clay. But as you claim to have been gathering information for weeks, tell me, what useful things have you learned about our enemies?
I've learned that Lin Cinder has the ability to control a lunar special operative, he said, reciting the information with as much emotion as an earthen android. However, she is untrained and lacks focus. She shows no talent for simultaneously engaging in both mental and physical battles.
Interesting speculation, Lavanna mused. In your estimation, would she have the mental focus required to torture an enemy, driving them to the brink of insanity?
Absolutely not, Your Majesty.
Absolutely not.
Well then, you are either much stupider than I ever suspected, or you are lying, as that is precisely what Lin Cinder did today against my head thaumaturge herself.
Another spike of emotion announced a sudden bout of nerves, but it was overshadowed by a loud thumping from the quarantine.
Of course he's lying,
the doctor screeched, his voice breaking. He had managed to haul himself off the lab table and was now pounding on the glass with his palms, leaving smears of bloodied spittle.
She's capable of killing your head thaumaturge and all your guards and your entire court. She's Princess Selene, the true heir to the throne. She can kill you all, and she will kill you all. She's coming for you, my queen, and she will destroy you.
Lavanna snarled.
Shut up! Shut up, you old man! Why won't you die already?
He was too busy gasping for breath to hear her. He collapsed to the ground, hands on his chest, his wheezing punctuated with hacking coughs. Jason Clay, when she turned back to him, was staring skeptically at the window. But within moments, his eyes began to fill with comprehension. His lips twitched, like he was ready to laugh at a joke he just now understood. It was a rare show of emotion that only angered her more.
Take him away. He will undergo a full investigation on Luna.
As Jason was marched back into the corridor, she faced Thaumaturge Park again, her hands fisted at her sides.
You are hereby promoted. Begin planning our departure immediately, and alert our research team to this new strain of letamosis. Also, initiate mobilizing procedures for our soldiers. Lin Cinder is too afraid to face me herself. The people of Earth will suffer for her cowardice.
You understand that with the loss of Thaumaturge Mira's programmer, we are not able to transport our ships to Earth without notice.
What do I care if Earth sees them coming? I hope it gives them time to beg for mercy before we destroy them.
Amory bowed. I will see it done, Your Majesty.
Lavanna glanced back to see that Dr. Sage Darnell was sprawled out on the floor, his body seizing between his coughs. She watched him writhe and jerk, her blood still boiling at his words. As far as the people of Luna and Earth knew, Selene had died 13 years ago. Lavanna was going to make sure it stayed that way.
She was the rightful queen of Luna, of Earth,
of the entire galaxy. No one would take that from her. Seething, she stepped closer,
close enough that she could see the trail of tears left on the doctor's scourged face.
"Sweet crescent moon,"
he whispered, his lips barely able to form the words. He began to shiver.
"Up in the sky,"
he hummed a few bars of a song, a lullaby that seemed barely familiar.
"You sing your song so sweetly after sunshine passes."
The last word hovered unspoken as he stopped shuddering and lay still, his blue eyes staring upward like empty marbles.
Chapter 57. Satellite AR-817.3. Deflect tracker. Set alternating timer. And check.
Which should just leave satellite AR-944.1. And that should do it.
Cress paused, breathed, and slowly lifted her fingers away from the cockpit's main screen, where she'd spent the last 3 hours ensuring that any satellites in their path would be conveniently turned away from them as they passed. As long as the Rampian's orbital path held, they shouldn't be detected. At least, not by satellite or radar. There was still the problem of visual sightings, and as the Eastern Commonwealth had announced 20 minutes ago that an enormous monetary reward would go to anyone who found the stolen Rampian, every ship between here and Mars would be on the lookout. They had to be prepared to run if anyone did spot them, which was made extra difficult now that they no longer had a trained pilot on board. At least, not one who could see. Thorne had managed to talk Cinder through the liftoff procedures, with vast amounts of help from the Rampian's new auto-control system. But it had been a rocky takeoff, followed by an immediate switch to neutral orbit. If they were faced with anything requiring more complicated maneuvers before Thorne got his eyesight back, they'd be in trouble. According to Cinder, they'd be in trouble even when he did have his eyesight back.
Cress massaged her neck, attempting to get her thoughts to stop spinning. When she was in the middle of a hack, it tended to fill up her brain until her vision hummed with coding and mathematics, skipping ahead to each necessary task faster than she could complete them. It tended to leave her in a state of drained euphoria. But for now, at least the Rampian was safe. She turned her attention to a yellow light at the base of the screen that had been annoying her since she'd begun, but that she'd been too preoccupied to deal with. As expected, when she prompted the ejection, a small, shimmering decom chip popped out from the screen. The match to the chip that Sybil had taken from her satellite, cutting off any hope that Cress and Thorne had of contacting their friends. Friends. She squinted at the chip as she held it up, wondering if that was the right word. It felt like having friends, especially after they'd survived the mission together. But then, she didn't have anything to compare this friendship to. One thing she knew for sure, though, was that she no longer needed to be rescued. She looked around for something she could use to destroy the chip and caught the ghost of a reflection in the cockpit window. Thorne stood in the doorway, behind her, hands tucked into his pockets. She gasped and spun to face him, her full skirt twisting around the chair's base. Though it was dirty and torn in places, she hadn't had the time to change yet and wasn't entirely sure she wanted to. The gown made her feel like she was still living in a drama and was perhaps keeping her from going into shock at all that had happened that day.
"You scared me."
Thorne flashed a moderately embarrassed grin.
"Sorry?
How long have you been standing there?"
He shrugged. "I was listening to you work. It's kind of relaxing. And I like it when you sing." She flushed. She didn't realize she'd been singing. Feeling his way forward, Thorne took the co-pilot's seat, setting the cane across his lap and kicking his boots up on the dash.
"Are we invisible again?"
"To radars, for now." She tucked some hair behind her ear.
"Could I see your cane?"
He raised an eyebrow but handed it to her without question. Cress dropped the decom chip to the ground and crushed it beneath the cane's tip. A shiver of empowerment ran through her.
"What was that?" Thorne asked.
"The decom chip you used to contact me before.
We won't be needing it again.
Seems like that was ages ago.
Thorn ran his finger along the blindfold. I'm sorry that you didn't get to see much of Earth while we were down there, and now you're stuck up here again.
I'm happy to be stuck up here.
She twirled the cane absently between her palms.
It's a great ship, far more spacious than the satellite, and much better company.
I can't argue with that.
Grinning, Thorn pulled a small bottle from his pocket.
I came in here to ask if you would help me with this. These are the mystical eye drops the doctor made. We're supposed to put 3 to 4 drops in each eye twice a day. Or was it 2 drops, 3 times? I don't remember. He wrote down the instructions on the port screen.
Thorn unclipped the port from his belt and handed it to her. Cress propped the cane against the panel of instruments.
He was probably worried you'd forget after such a high stress.
She trailed off, her eye catching on the port screen text. Thorn cocked his head.
What's wrong?
The port had opened to a screen containing instructions for the eye drops, and also a detailed account of why Dr. Erland believed the plague was a manufactured weapon being used as biological warfare. But at the top of all that,
there's a tab labeled with my name.
Not Cress.
Crescent Moon Darnell.
Oh, it was the doctor's port.
Cress's fingers glided over the screen, and she'd opened the tab before her mind could decide whether it wanted to know what was in it or not.
A DNA analysis, she said, and a paternity confirmation.
Standing, she set the port on the control panel.
Let's do your eye drops.
Cress.
He reached for her, his fingers gathering up the folds of her skirt.
Are you all right?
Not really. She looked down at him. Thorn had pulled the blindfold around his neck, revealing a faint tan line around his eyes. Gulping, Cress sank into the pilot's chair again.
I should have told him I loved him. He was dying, and he was right there, and I knew I would never see him again, but I couldn't say it. Am I horrible?
Of course not. He may have been your biological father, but you still barely knew him. How could you have loved him?
Does it matter? He said he loved me. He was dying, and now he's gone, and I'll never—
Cress, hey, stop it.
Thorn swiveled his chair to face her. He found her wrists before sliding his hands down to intertwine with her fingers.
You didn't do anything wrong. It all happened so fast, and there was nothing you could do.
She bit her lip.
He took my blood sample that first day in Farafra.
She squeezed her eyes shut.
He knew all this time, almost a whole week. Why didn't he tell me sooner?
He probably wanted to wait for the right time. He didn't know he was going to die.
He knew there was a chance we were all going to die.
Her next breath shook inside her diaphragm, and as the tears started, she felt herself being pulled toward Thorn. He drew her into his lap, scooping one arm beneath her legs to keep the enormous skirt from tangling around her. Sobbing, Cress buried her face against his chest and let the tears come. She cried hard at first, the release pouring out of her all at once. But she almost felt guilty when, minutes later, the tears already started to dry up. Her sadness wasn't enough. Her mourning wasn't enough. But it was all she had. Thorn held her until the sound of his heartbeat became louder than the sound of her crying. He smoothed her hair back from her face, and though it was selfish, Cress was glad that he couldn't see her then, with her red face and puffy eyes and all the unladylike fluids she'd left on his shirt.
Listen, Cress, he murmured against her hair once her breaths were almost stable.
I'm not an expert by any means, but
I know you didn't do anything wrong today. You shouldn't tell someone you love them unless you mean it.
She sniffed.
But I thought you said you've told lots of girls that you loved them.
Which is exactly why I'm not an expert.
Thing is, I didn't love any of them.
I'm honestly not sure I would recognize real love if it was...
She swiped the back of her hand over her damp cheeks.
If it was what?
Nothing.
Clearing his throat, Thorn leaned his head against the back of the chair. Are you all right? Sniffing again, she nodded.
I think so. I might still be in a little bit of shock.
I think we all are after today.
Cress spotted the bottle of the eyedropper solution beside the doctor's port screen. She didn't want to pry herself away from Thorne's arms, but she also didn't want to think about the doctor anymore, the secret he'd kept, the words she couldn't say.
We should probably take care of these eye drops.
When you're done shaking, Thorne said. I don't like shaking things near my eyes.
She laughed weakly and went to pull herself from his lap. Thorne's arms tightened, but only for a moment before he let her go. She forced her guilt back and sighed. She wouldn't think about it right now. After reading the doctor's instructions, 3 drops in each eye, 4 times a day for 1 week, she unscrewed the top. Drawing the solution up into the dropper, she moved to stand behind Thorne's chair, her wrinkled gown swaying around her. Thorne propped his feet on the control panel again and tilted back until his face was turned up to the ceiling. She hadn't seen his eyes in days, but they were as blue as ever. Cress placed a hand on his brow to steady herself, and his cheek twitched.
Here goes, she murmured, squeezing the dropper.
He instinctively flinched and blinked, pushing the drops like tears down his temples. Cress brushed them away, unable to resist smoothing a strand of hair off his forehead. Her attention caught on his lips, and suddenly, self-conscious, she pulled her fingertips away.
How does that feel?
He squeezed his eyes shut for a moment.
Like I have water in my eyes?
Then he chuckled wryly, opening them again.
Maybe the solution is just water and the doctor was playing a practical joke on me.
That would be awful, she said, twisting the cap back onto the solution. He wouldn't have done that.
No, you're right. Not after what we went through to get it.
He lifted his head from the back of the chair, tugging at the bandana knotted around his neck.
Though he did make it pretty clear that he didn't think too highly of me.
If that's true, it's only because he didn't know you well enough yet.
True, I would have charmed him eventually.
She smiled.
Of course you would have, in addition to showing him your many other fine qualities, she said,
blushing as she set a reminder on the port screen to go off 4 times a day. But when she looked at Thorne again, his expression had become serious.
Captain?
His Adam's apple bobbed. Sitting up straighter, Thorne rubbed his palms together.
I have to tell you something.
Oh?
Hope skittered through her veins as she claimed the pilot seat again. The luxurious dress poofed around her. The rooftop. The kiss. Had he realized how much he loved her?
What is it?
Thorne pulled his feet off the control panel.
Remember when we were in the desert, and I said I didn't want to hurt you because you were wrong about me?
She nodded her fingers together.
When you tried to deny how much of a hero you really are?
She tried to put a hint of teasing into the statement, but her nerves were so jittery it came out as more of a frightened squeak.
A hero.
Exactly. Thorne rubbed a finger between the blindfold and his throat, loosening it.
Here's the thing. That girl I stood up for when those jerks took her port screen?
Kate Fallow?
Right, Kate Fallow. Well, she was really good at math, and at the time I was failing.
The anticipation fluttering through her body turned to ice. Wait, was this his confession? Something to do with Kate Fallow? He cleared his throat when she didn't say anything.
I lost the fight and all, but she still let me copy her homework for a month. That's why I did it, not out of a misplaced desire to be heroic.
But you said you had a crush on her.
Cress, he smiled, but it looked strained. I had a crush on every girl. Believe me, it wasn't a big motivator.
She squeezed back against the chair and pulled her knees to her chest.
Why are you telling this to me now?
I couldn't before. You were so certain that I was this other person, and I kind of liked that you saw me differently than anyone else.
Part of me kept thinking that maybe you'd been right all along and it's everyone else who'd been wrong about me. That even I've been wrong about me. He shrugged. But even that was just my ego talking, wasn't it? And you deserve to know the truth. And you think my entire opinion of you was based on one incident that happened when you were 13 years old? His brow knitted. I'd thought I'd done a pretty good job of clarifying all those other incidents, but if you have more, by all means, let me ruin those for you, too. She bit her lip. The rooftop. The kiss. He'd kept his promise. He'd given her a kiss worth waiting for because she was about to die. They were both about to die. She knew it had been a risk, and probably a stupid one. And that was the choice he'd made, rather than let her die without experiencing that one perfect moment. She could think of nothing more heroic. So why wouldn't he mention it? Perhaps, more important, why couldn't she? No, she whispered finally. I guess I can't think of anything else. He nodded, though his expression was disappointed. So, given all this new information, you, probably don't think you're still in love with me, do you? She shrank into her chair, sure that if he could see her now, he would know. The truth would be evident in every angle of her face. She loved him more than ever. And not because she scoured file after file of reports and summaries and data and photographs. Not because he was the dreamy, untouchable Carswell Thorne that she'd imagined kissing on the banks of a starlit river while fireworks exploded overhead and violins played in the background. Now, he was the Carswell Thorne who had given her strength in the desert, who had come for her when she was kidnapped, who had kissed her when hope was lost and death was imminent. Thorne awkwardly scratched his ear.
That's what I thought. I figured it was just the fever talking anyway.
Her heart twisted. Captain? He perked up. Yeah? She picked at the chiffon overlay of her skirt. Do you think it was destiny that brought us together? He squinted and, after a thoughtful moment, shook his head.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Cinder.
Why?
I guess I have a confession, too.
She pressed the skirt down around her legs, her face already burning.
I had a crush on you before we even met, just from seeing you on the net screens. I used to believe that you and I were destined to be together someday and that we would have this great, epic romance.
One eyebrow ticked upward.
Wow. No pressure or anything.
She squirmed. Her body was vibrating with nerves.
I know. I'm sorry. I think you might be right, though. Maybe there isn't such a thing as fate. Maybe it's just the opportunities we're given and what we do with them. I'm beginning to think that maybe great epic romances don't just happen. We have to make them ourselves.
Thorne shuffled his feet.
You know, if it was a bad kiss, you can just say so.
She stiffened.
That's not at all what I... Wait. Did you think it was a bad kiss?
No, he said with an abrupt, clumsy laugh. I thought it was,
he cleared his throat.
But there were clearly a lot of expectations and a lot of pressure and...
He squirmed in the chair.
We were going to die, you know.
I know, she squeezed her knees into her chest. And no, it wasn't... I didn't think it was a bad kiss.
Oh, thank the stars.
His head fell back against the chair.
Because if I'd ruined that for you, I was going to feel like such a cad.
Well, don't. It met every expectation. I suppose I should thank you?
The discomfort melted from his features, and she was jealous as her blush stayed burning hot. Thorne held a hand out toward her, and it took every ounce of the courage she'd earned that day to tuck her hand into his.
Believe me, Cress, the pleasure was all mine.